We will now take verbal roll call. President Delmore.
Here.
Vice President Simon.
Here.
Secretary Abrahamian.
Here.
Alder Vitiver.
Here.
Alder MGR. Absent. Board Member Strozier.
Here.
Board Member Callisto.
Here.
Board Member Witinski. Absent. Chair, the floor is yours.
Okay. Our first item is approval of the minutes from last month. Do we have a motion to approve? Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Jody, do we have any public comment?
There are no registrants.
Okay. And disclosures or refusals, do we have any? Seeing none, this is going to move to our first item of business, which is a report on operational resiliency projects.
Yes. Pretty exciting. Thank you.
Great. Yeah, good afternoon. I think some of this conversation came up when we were presenting on some of the budget amendment work for that Midtown Road pipeline, which I've included as one of the resilience projects here. But I think there were just some general questions. Sadly, I wasn't at that particular meeting, but I think there were some questions just about resilience projects, what we've been up to for the last handful of years and kind of the impacts they've had on our system. So I tried to capture a list of since 2020, 2021 range, some of the projects we've identified and either executed or in the process of executing to just add system resilience, which I generally define as maintaining our typical system conditions in every zone or region, you know, regardless of conditions, whether that's high demand, if a given facility is down, you know, a water main break that kind of creates a choke point to affect, you know, water distribution or pressure. So our previous water supply manager kind of took a large look at the system and identified a number of areas that we could target to do that. And given, you know, the financial situation we were in, you know, just 5 years ago, it was, well, how can we do it in, you know, a budget-friendly way, but still kind of maximize our impact in that system resilience goal? So between need and cost, we came up with a list of projects to kind of tackle. So I think the map sort of best summarizes it. Green projects are ones that are completed, red are to be done. And then there's a description kind of in the memo, a short summary of what we did, how much it cost us to do it, and when we completed it, and kind of the overall impact to the system. I listed it as flow potential, but really I think the end result is maintaining system operations as normal. So that's kind of how I tried to lay it out. Happy to take kind of questions on any of them or
historical as well. So he's an engineer, I'm not, so I'll use the non-engineering way. So when I got here, June of 2021, there was pressure to declare water shortage emergency. It was that bad. We had a tough summer that year. And supply was getting a little closer to a comfortable level. So typically we ask the community to kind of cut down the usage. Given our general storage situation, that was kind of a surprise to me. You know, we shouldn't be there, honestly, with our kind of supplies. And then that time I talked with Jody Morin, the then water supply manager. So this is what I discerned. We have four regions as identified in the map. A, B is one region, C and D. Now, three regions, right?
Yeah, A, B, kind of, I mean, yeah, we still call it A, B, but so with the work.
That time, A and B were separate. So we had four regions. And typically, we wouldn't be able to move water from one region to the other. So they were standalone kind of areas. So there could be surplus in one region and pretty low storage on the neighboring region, but there was no mechanism to move the water. So I asked Joe the question, what if we can move water from one region to the other, especially when there is a surplus in one region? He said, that's doable, but we need to have certain projects that would facilitate that movement of water. And so we found the fancy name for it, resiliency projects, so that our overall resiliency improves after the projects. And those arrows are the real key element. If you look closely, the red arrow between AD and region C. So we have now a mechanism to move water both ways, from AB to C and C to AD, and so on and so forth. And then what are the dotted lines, Epi? The one project?
So that's one that does, it goes mostly from 7 to 6W is the direction that goes. But as you can kind of see, like around, you know, well 14 there, that is a, that's a choke point of sorts of our system. So to get another feed there has been difficult to do. So even that one way addition, it makes a big deal to that part of our system.
And the good news, over the last 4 years, for about $1.5 million, we were able to build in this next layer of resilience. You can't completely obviate the need for additional sources of supply given our growth, but at least we are trying to optimize or maximize our resources. And as the next report from Joe would indicate, there are regions where there is a large amount of surplus. So if only we could move. So so over the 4 years, we have done a lot of projects, and one is still underway. And we, I've never seen this put together for the board, collection of these projects that we have done over the last four years. So that's the non-engineering version of this journey.
But, and just overall, this is always a goal of ours. It's just how much money and what kind of timeline does it cost to achieve, you know, full system resilience. So we've got major projects, right? I present on, you know, our unit well projects, for example, which are seven-figure projects. But like, what can we do in the short term to really kind of gain some significant system resilience in addition to like our long-term plan of, you know, and more costly plan of kind of continuing to work on the system.
So your system is now a little bit more resilient.
Right. But question, yeah. Has the staff or Joe, have you ever looked at the idea of connecting with sister utilities that, you know, parallel our border as a way to either push our surplus and make some extra money or get additional resiliency for our system when times are tight?
We do have a few intergovernmental agreements for, I mean, one example is there's a valve in the Monona Foundry that can be opened depending on need either way. McFarland's reached out about something similar. Cottage Grove, we've had some discussions as well, but yeah, that is a thing both that currently exists and can potentially expand in the future too.
How many emergency interties do we have, roughly? 2, 3, 4?
I can think of 2, Monona and Fitchburg. I'm not positive about the others. And generally, it would, I think, be us distributing to them, just given the size of the system. But it, you know, the agreements are crafted to go both ways, for sure.
Regina. What are the blank areas that are not colored?
So just not city limits, I think. Gray, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, so like around Lake Wingra, for example. There's the gap there. I believe that's
all old town of Madison, isn't it? That's all been incorporated.
We talked about that last week or last month. I mean, isn't there a utility there for the Arboretum area?
Yeah.
It could also have to do with the extents of our system. So there's probably some of the town in there, but some of the town is also still on private well. So that could be part of it.
Other questions? Okay, Jody.
We do roll call again.
Sure.
Alder NGR has arrived. President Delmore?
Here.
Vice President Simon?
Here.
Secretary Abrahamian?
Here.
Alder Vidiver?
Here.
Alder MGR?
Here.
Board Member Strozier?
Here.
Board Member Callisto?
Here.
Board Member Witinski? Absent. Thank you.
Other questions or comments? I guess I'd make a comment. I thought it was really a well-designed report and maybe a graphics and special plus illustrating what type of work has been done and just looking at the money involved, it really was one cost-effective solution at a time in which we needed something like that.
Thank you. Yeah, we've been really happy with it. Actually, a quick update on the Midtown Road Pipeline. We did just get bids back on Friday, so that those came in $150,000 lower than our estimate. So, you know, as these numbers continue to flesh out, you know, it continues to look even more favorable. So, very happy with that. I get no credit for the graphics. We have a very talented person in our mapping group that put that together.
Okay.
So.
Do we have a motion to approve? And do we have a second? Second. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Pete. I guess now we go to our monthly reports and the water production monthly report, Joan.
So standard report through the end of May, looking at average daily production of 25.3 million gallons a day. That compares to our reliable daily capacity of just under 40 million gallons. So we're using about 60% of our reliable daily capacity. That is, however, less than 50% of our maximum daily capacity that is available to us, assuming that all unit wells are in service, but as we know, that's not the case. As we were just, as was just discussed, regional surplus of over 13 million gallons, disproportionately split between the three regions, A, B, C, and D. And as was just discussed, got a pretty significant surplus there in that region C, which is the near west and west portions of the city. And so these resiliency projects allow us to move it into those, into zone A, B, and D. Also showing our cumulative year-to-date production, again, through the end of May, we've delivered 3.7 billion gallons of water. We're about 4% higher than last year. But again, understanding that last year was an exceptionally wet year, and so was a very low demand here. Shifting to well capacity utilization. Again, this just showing by region, what is our utilization? And again, we're using about 40% of that available capacity within each of those three regions. And then I do highlight in that final column, those units where we're around 60%. And we have guidance from the board to try to keep those under 50%. But at this portion, at this point of the year, some of these are a little bit higher than normal due to other units being out of service. So if we look at region AB, where we have well number 9 at 62% of our utilization, that's doing all the work of the area that receives water from 9 and 31, because 31's been out of service since February. Similarly, in region D, we have units 16 and 28, both at about 60%. And that's because they've been working extra hard to supply water while well 26 was out of service. And so 26 is now back in service, so that number will increase, and those for 16 and 28 will decrease as the year goes on. And we can have that similar discussion in region C, where well 12 is at about a little over 60%. And again, that's making up for well 20, which had been out of service earlier this year. And so again, well 20 will go up as the year goes on, and well 12's utilization will go down over time. The one exception is well 18, and that's just running a little bit. We're pumping that a little harder in an attempt to address a water quality issue at that well, and that's been successful so far. So it's unlikely that number is going to come down much from that 60%. So that's attachment B. And then the final attachment is we currently have three wells that are out of service for repairs or upgrades. Well 15, as we all know, we were hoping that maybe by the end of this month that we would have that back in service. We're running a few weeks behind on that due to some delays and some electrical work and some programming. So it's more likely that the end of July or early August, that will be back in service. Pete will provide some additional updates during his capital projects report. Well 31, this continues to be out of service. We keep waiting on the well contractor to say that they finally have the parts and that we can schedule the well installation, but we certainly expect well 31 to be back in service by hopefully no later than mid-July. And then the third one is our well 19. This is a project to add iron, manganese, and radium treatment. This was the full filter project is expected to go online later this fall, trying to get some functionality or some operability of that unit, whether for storage with the large reservoir that's there later this summer. But again, there's been some delays with that construction project, again, on the electrical work and programming. There's also been a delay in the procurement of a pump at that location. So some of those delays are pushing us back into July or August for some functionality of the well. But it may be more likely the case that that's not operable until the end of October. So if we want to have a conservative approach, can confidently say that October maybe have some operability before then. So that's all I have. So are there any questions or comments? Yeah.
So you mentioned that the pumps are delayed. Is that because manufacturing problems in the U.S., manufacturing problems abroad, issues with getting materials? Do we know what's the delay and what it bodes for the future?
Answer that question better than I can. I think there was some discussions about, well, there was a delay in one pump, and then we had an alternate pump that we were considering. And so then there was some discussion about, do we go with the one that's, you know, going to take a little bit longer to procure, or do we go with this other one? So, but I don't know if you had any.
Yeah, as far as the like actual root cause of the manufacturing delays, it's not clear to me, and they're not always clear with us as to if it's a international or domestic issue. I do know there's just a lot of literal moving parts involved, and so like a supplier creates something, sends it to the manufacturer, puts it together, and I do want to believe we're not getting really pulled around by our vendors, but it is a complicated process. I will say, though, it's dramatically improved since, say, 2021, when there were a ton of supply chain, you know, issues, but there's still these delays that do come up. And that's proven to be one of our limiting steps here in this project.
Any other questions? Thank you, Joe. January financial conditions report.
Well, hello, so I'm going to go right to Matt Passington back to that in a bit. So Matt Camp Vegas, this is as of June 17th. We have a total of 534 applicants that were approved, of which 302 were homeowners, and then 232 were renters. Total applications not approved were 314. So
We have received then a total of 840 applications, and we have 178 households that were enrolled in conservation programs. With that, going to our financial detail, this is as of May 31st. Our total revenue was $21.1 million, of which $20 million of that is sales of water. Our total expenditures is $18.8 million, and our net operating fund is $2.3 million. So our ending fund balance is $18.4 million. And our water revenue then went down a little bit, $112,000 compared to budget, and pumpage was up about 1.5% during this time frame. For construction fund, our total capital revenue is $6.4 million, made up of safe drinking water loan, expense depreciation, and then transfer from operating fund. Our total capital expenditures and encumbrances is $16.3 million, of which $7.9 million is encumbrances, leaving us with the ending fund balance of $166,000 for construction fund. And our total cash reserve is $62.3 million, of which $19.8 million is unrestricted. The rest are held for bond reserves, depreciation, pilot fund, assessment accounts, and our construction funds. So we have a we have 5.25 numbers a month of expenditures covered by our operating. With that, is there any questions or comments?
Yeah, one question. Just looking at the comment you have, the bullet point on the summary, what are revenues from down but pumpage is up? I'm trying to understand. Seems to be a disconnect.
So budgets are set, like technically we set our budgets like right now for 2026. And so this is just comparing our actual revenue what we budget. So it's a little bit, I mean, it's $112,000 off compared to budget. So
small.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm still not sure I understand it though. Overall pumpage is up over the year before.
1.5% during compared like just this month time frame from like May of 2024 to May of 2025.
So I guess the question I should be asking is where is pumpage compared to budget?
That I don't know right offhand.
That's a good question, pumpage versus our revenue. I think we are tracking on the revenue end fairly okay. Mm-hmm. And pumpage would vary as a function of the weather here and there. But we don't anticipate the pumpage to be either up or down significantly, even this year. So, and also predicting pumpage is hard. So is predicting revenue in our line of business. If we have, let's say, a 7-day heat wave, January is very happy. Joe Grande is very unhappy, and vice versa.
Sure.
So, and how can we predict, that kind of fluctuation? So internally, I tell staff, we should be prepared for a plus or minus of up to $5 million any given year. That's the line of business that we are in.
I guess I would find a better summary here on that point would be to have pumpage as compared to budget on pumpage.
That's fair.
You're talking about current dollars versus...
Yeah. Yeah.
Current pumpage, I think, would be a better,
yeah,
better metric.
Nope, that is a good note. I will make.
I disagree that it's tough to predict all. I just like to see the apples to apples.
That explanation is me.
Other questions? Okay. Thank you, January. Pete, capital conditions report.
Great. So I'll go through some of the typical items that we've been doing these presentations. So we got our three major projects kind of underway, two hopefully finishing up soon, one getting going through the loan application process, which is exciting. But I guess first just kind of going to
sort of our actual expenditures, encumbrances. On the next slide, no surprise, a lot of that has gone into facilities right now as we're kind of reaching this final stretch of getting those projects complete. There's been quite a bit of work completed, therefore quite a bit of work paid out. Pipelines are beginning to now, you know, we've spent the last few months encumbering contracts, getting work lined up. You know, this number, 610,000, kind of reflects we're starting to execute and pay out that work as well. So as you'll see kind of on the expense depreciation slide, the next one, we're continuing to line up quite a bit more. So our actual expenditures through May related to specifically pipeline expense depreciation is close to that $600,000 figure, but the encumbrances plus expenditures, again, we've got quite a bit in the queue now. We just encumbered our pretty significant pipelining contract, which counts towards this. So now we're near $4.5 million just through May alone. So lining up to hit that target pretty quickly for the year here, which is as expected. This is construction season. So Joe alluded to some work on our 15 to 19 projects. So starting with 19, I think the most notable thing with the deep well installation rehabilitation, there were some pump delays with the equipment there. Word is that should be delivered in the coming weeks. So hopefully we'll have deep well operability by mid-July. For facility operability at an acceptable kind of level of operation, that would involve programming and testing as well. Lining up the controls programmers is difficult, and their next available date is early August. So that's when we have that slated at this point. Similarly, with well 15, the programming and testing with the some of the filter tanks and other system operations is looking at mid-July at this point, and startup training testing of the new filter tanks should follow shortly after that. That's about 1 month from today is between when the filter media will be delivered and some of the startup and testing can begin. Again, we don't think it's acceptable to do that until we've got kind of full facility control through the controls programming. So that is why we pushed that, and that's where that rests right now. Although we don't currently expect the sort of final project completion date to be impacted. So we're still looking at end of August for that. It's just a slight delay in the system operability, the facility operations, which been down since 2019, so an extra month or so. I don't think will impact us too badly, but we're excited to get that going. So the next 30 days should be telling for us on that project. And then with well 12, so our deadline for to have plans and specs for the safe drinking water loan application is Monday. We've been meeting with the consultant to kind of make sure that the plans and specs are in an acceptable state to submit with that application. That's part of the requirement. It's looking good. It's not the final chance for comments or adjustments, but the major pieces are all in place there as part of the application. One key takeaway from our pre-application meeting with the DNR was, you know, within the terms of the safe drinking water loan program, they don't care about added storage necessarily. There's a cost differential from 1.0 to 1.5 million gallons that would have been beneficial to include in this project, but the DNR would not consider financing that if it's not specifically in the interest of safe drinking water, rehabbing the current reservoir out there. So what they view to be kind of excessive storage or a storage-based need, they wouldn't agree to finance as part of this project. So we took a look at the kind of acceptable size and determined 1 million gallons would allow us to efficiently run the pumps basically once a day, which you know, efficiency of operations is part of the program. So that's what we're going to submit now with our plans and specs there. It will cost a little less, which, you know, is fine, but you know, just the kind of the overall scale of getting an extra 500,000 gallons of storage would have been nice. We're not pressed for storage in this area, but you know, in terms of maximizing dollars and cents would have been good, but so is financing. So we landed at 1.0. That's how we're going to proceed. So we'll have some updated probable costs, which again should be lower now with that in mind. After this application deadline, we'll kind of proceed with the next steps for permitting. We'll start some public meetings to kind of get that back on the agenda, and then work with the PSC for their construction authorization as well. We'll head into next year. So those are kind of the major additional items on my list right now, but again, happy to take questions or other discussion.
Any questions,
Eric? On the delta, the 500,000 gallon delta, what was the extra cost?
Around $200,000. And we're committed for, you know, around $3 or $3.5 million to, you know, to get I have to look again, maybe a 750,000 gallon tank. You know, we're committed for around, I think, $2.5 million. You know, so once you're in, once you're building a tank, you may as well expand the radius a little bit, right?
Is there any ability to supplement the DNR loan with other funds? I mean, if it makes sense to have an extra 500,000 gallons, why not? Find $200,000 in the SOFA.
Since you introduced that topic, I'll be the arbitrator, Pete. So we went through all those gyrations. Now I'll tell you the whole truth. We could survive without $1 million tank, easily, million gallon tanks easily, and DNR is smart enough to kind of know that any additional capacity in their mind is not fun. It's not eligible for funding, understand you. So actually, Pete went to the design board and took a hard look at it, and one should sufficiently do the job for us. Now, and also they have not guaranteed the loan yet. So we are in the review phase. So we will formally submit an application for 1 million a gallon tank. And assuming, so I have not talked to you about this, Pete. So if we get that approval for 1 million, if we can use our own funds to get it back to 1.5, I don't know whether that would ruffle them too much. We can check with them. So we can easily find the cash to supplement your question, but I don't want to run foul with their program. So that's something we will explore once their results, when the decision is known. Thank you.
Yeah, we'd like a clean approval of the application, I think, and then can explore the margins.
Big question.
Other questions? Thank you, Pete.
Thanks.
Dan, operations.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm just sharing a little snapshot of some of the things we do in operations, and I'll just highlight a few items. Please feel free to ask any questions anytime. One thing I'll note is the number of hydrant inspections. We are over 2,100 hydrants inspected in the first 5 months of the year. Our goal is to inspect and operate and maintain all of our hydrants every 2 years. So we're on the right course here. The big thing is in May was flushing. Obviously, you can see we've done almost 400 flushing runs. We've had crews out every day, both unidirectionally and conventionally flushing, and they've been doing a great job. Next thing I guess I'll point out is the number of valve inspections we did. Almost 670 valves were operated and inspected in the month of May. As you can see, for the year to date, in 5 months, they've operated and inspected over 5,000 valves in our system. And that is partly in the beginning of the year when it's cold. Obviously, we're not flushing. They're out exercising and inspecting the valves. And once flushing season starts, they still have to, when unidirectionally flushing, inspect and operate the valves. So it continues on. But so that's how we got to that 5,000 number in 5 months. The last thing I guess I'll point out is you can see at the bottom, we were able to close out 225, what I call dirt ditches, and setting work that's done in a grass area or terrace, boulevard, any of that. Go back, pack the dirt and seed it, put down cover over it, water it. So obviously May was a good month to get that going. It's seasonal. We try to get that accomplished in the spring. To get the grass growing. So, and then after that's caught up, and then we go to paving repair close out. So we do hot patch. We have started doing concrete work, preparing, replacing concrete we had to take out as part of our work. So that's been done.
Questions for Dan?
Yeah, just one. Sorry, go ahead.
So my question is a little more general, but it's been happening in my district a fair amount. But there's a repair. The road gets an initial
blacktop.
How long does that sit until it's actually leveled?
Sure. Blacktopping is a little complicated. Every street has a rating, 1 through 10. We are capable of hot patching any ditch that's less than 8x8. And the pavement rating is less than 7. We do, we'll go back, saw cut them out, dig them out, compact them, and do a permanent hot patch ditch. In the wintertime, obviously, they don't make hot patch. It's 1,000 degrees, you know, and it just doesn't work. So we put a temporary patch, you know, during the times of November through, I forget when they open, maybe April, as soon as it gets warm. So there's 5 months where we just have to use cold patch. We have to go back. I've already lost it. Where was I? What was your question? Did I answer?
So there's several places where there's been a repair.
Yep.
There's asphalt down.
Yep.
It is sunken.
Uh-huh.
So my question is how long till it comes out and
sure.
And we actually have like stuff we can drive
yeah.
on it by.
Well, like I was saying, once we get our dirting done, then we'll focus on hot patching. We have a crew go out and someone goes ahead and saw cuts them, and we go out, dig them out, and then we hot patch them that day. And then a pretty good majority of them are turned over to the city contract. We have no control over that. We provide them, and they go out, and you'll see the white marks around them. That's city engineering marking it out for the contractor. And then we pay the contractor off of the city contract for the work that is required by city engineering that we do. So that's how that works. So we have no control over that timing. We can beg for, a certain one that needs it, but.
Now, in our experience, how long does it take, roughly 6 months?
Well, yeah, a good portion of the summer to get through all of our ditches. I don't have an exact count.
I have one right near my house. I saw the white linings.
Yeah.
No one has come for at least.
Yeah, so that would be one that's going to be contracted out. When you see the white paint, that's what that is. But yeah. And we do go back and we will add to them. As part of the problem is you know, in the wintertime, the ground is frozen 4 feet deep. And then we're using frozen gravel. You've got pockets of areas that can settle over time. And we do go back. If we get calls or if we see a ditch down, we go back and we will add cold patch to it until we can get to it, do the final hot patching. How that works.
Since I have a selfish interest. So if it gets delayed, let's say 4 or 5 or 6 months, do our crew go back and at least patch it up if there's a large hole?
Well, yeah, we keep them safe. You know, that's the goal. Everybody helps us with that. We get calls occasionally where a ditch does settle or
see, calling helps is
where or yeah, a rain, you know, a rain event or something can right. wash a ditch yeah. out and you know it's
because we have the ability to temporarily fill one more time.
Yeah. It's bad. And I do get calls from my mother occasionally. She has concerns, she sees a ditch and she'll call me. It's not mine, it's not ours. So everybody's calling, which is good. So yep, it's a big effort. Keep up with that.
Eric, did you have a question?
Yes. I noticed that there's been no past in place pipelining done this year, and we got a lot of information last year on why that was mm-hmm. the next best thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We're this year, I think we're doing over 10,000 feet of it, and we've started in the Arbor Hills neighborhood. Our crews have
started ahead of the contractor and have done some preliminary work cutting in new valves and hydrants and areas throughout this project. So we have moved into that area and started it. Now exactly, and I believe the contractor started last Monday. So they've just went in, and I don't know if PG, you have any other updates on that, but I believe they've made all the temporary water connections, and also the project has started in that area. So I only report on once the
you got it.
The yeah. pipe is in.
Next month it will be there. Right?
We'll see. It's a big project. So, but I'll update it as feet are installed. You put it in service.
Other questions? Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
What's that number?
Yeah, call me anytime. Thank you,
Marcus. Public information.
Everyone. All right. So June has been pretty consistent. So really, everything that you see for June is pretty much the average, despite some of the challenges that the utility faced overall. It's been a great, really active month for the communications department. If you look at our social media posts, 19 this month, and that is just about the average, 19 or 20. So Jody's been doing a great job keeping the community and our almost 20,000 social media followers apprised of everything that's going on with the utility and in the community. And even some of the stuff about like Juneteenth and things like that really, really kind of engages the community and really gives us sheds a good light on the utility in that way. You look at media mentions, of course, there were a couple. I think there was one about the PFAS treatment at Well 15. And then also our very own Joe Grandy was on WORT. Radio show a couple weeks ago too, so that was pretty cool. Gave some great information about the project and about the utility in general. And then you look at customer service calls again, just about the average, about the almost 11,000 customer service calls this year. That was about 1,900 or so, almost 1,900 calls that our customer service department took in June. So they do a great job really kind of being the front lines. I guess even to that note, I've actually received a couple calls that they transferred about some of the pavement and things like that. And it is tough because, when it's streets department or engineering or us or whatever can, kind of denigrate the pavement, it does all go on this contract. And I actually reached out to try to figure out, because there was a resident that asked about when specifically this would be fixed in front of their house and it was dangerous and things like that. And I didn't get an answer. So we do just have a contract and they have thousands of sites that they have to go to. And usually by the end of the summer, all of them are intact and fixed. And if you look at our meter shop calls, what I noticed about this, they have almost 2,500 calls that they've received this year alone. What I noticed about this is that actually, when I got here 4 years ago, there was no, standalone meter shop website or really customer service or anything like that. So really breaking that out and creating their own website where they can schedule appointments and things like that, you really see that those 2,500 calls would have likely gone to customer service, and they would have tried to walk people through scheduling appointments and different things like that. So really to kind of break that out, you can see how helpful that's been. Website views, we're nearing 100,000 website views, by far the most I've seen since I've been here. So you can kind of really see that people do utilize our social media and website for information more and more, in this day and age, as opposed to like just picking up the phone and calling. So really important to have accurate information on the website and things like that, because like I said, almost 100,000. So looking at like almost 200,000 for the year, by the end of the year. We always send our emails to our flushing updates to the email list subscribers, and then other things that may be going on. If there was any emergency or drought or anything like that, water loss. And then news releases haven't had a lot really with news releases. I like to see the lowest number. Usually the news releases is something that's impactful, and if we can kind of fly under the radar, that's always good. If you look at our ongoing projects and initiatives, not a lot has changed here. The website translations are pretty much done. We're just translating like the bottom menus and things like that. So I'm working with IT on that. Jody is still working on getting more where's water features Just had a recent one at the Hilldale Dental, which is really fun. So you can go to our website and check that out. And if you want to see how a dentist uses water, if you want to see how a zoo uses water, you know, go educate yourself. And I mean, they're all really interesting with pictures and things like that too. January updated us on the MADCAP stuff. The income guidelines have been updated. They're much higher than last year. So that's good, allows more people to qualify. The web form development IT did finish it, but they're just implementing it now. So people will be able to go on their phone and just directly apply as opposed to like filling out a PDF and sending it in, things like that. So that should help with some of the, just some of the barriers to applying for MADCAP, especially when they apply and then we don't get their income documentation and things like that, or they don't really understand the conservation programs, stuff like that. This will make it a lot easier. Back to the meter shop, we did create a new kind of appointment, I guess, form that people can sign up for appointments. That'll come in handy, really. That's just like kind of setting the infrastructure, so to speak, and the groundwork for if they are needed in other ways, like with the lead service stuff or anything like that. We already kind of have this website. We've sent out postcards, and there's a QR code that people can scan and go directly to schedule their appointment. So every 20 years, I believe, people need to change out their meter. So you get that postcard, you say, oh, it's time for my meter change, scan that QR code, it'll take you directly to the appointment page. So again, that should kind of clear some barriers for people and make it less of a daunting task. Of course, like, you don't really want people coming in there, you don't want to do this, but if you make it easier on them, that usually helps out. And then really just keeping the community engaged and educated and apprised of everything that's going on with the major capital projects, like Well 15, Well 19, Well 12, we haven't really mentioned anything just because we know that that's in the loan process and stuff like that. So we'll wait until after planning stages to really highlight that stuff. But speaking about the resiliency projects with the water main rehabilitation, that's over at Todd Drive. And actually, Alder Figueroa Cole actually did reach out about that and was wondering. And it is nice that, you know, we always go above and beyond. And we were out there before the contractor was even out there and making sure that the project runs as smooth as possible. And I think this is our 11th or 12th or 13th year doing these projects. So it's pretty cool, and it's become a regular thing. If you look at our community outreach events, like I said, it was a really active June. Jody did a great job being out there in the community, and coming up in July, some really, really great events. Jody, I don't know if you want to mention anything.
Just if you're available, feel free to check out the schedule that I sent you and come to some of our events. We'll be at Art Fair in the Square. That's a good one. Feel free to stop by. Say hi.
Yeah. Like we said, I mean, we're taking attendance, so whoever hasn't been to a waterway or anything yet. No, it's a good one. July is a good month. You know, all the really big stuff, like Joey said, Art Fair and Square. And then, of course, you can look at Taste of Madison later in the summer and stuff like that. So those are good ones around the Capitol to attend.
Can you officially have an official T-shirt for board members as well?
Yes, I got to represent.
Other questions, Marcus? Okay. So could we have a motion to approve the 5 reports that we've just heard?
Someone.
Do a second. Robbie? All in favor?
Aye.
And we are at the evaluation portion. And Robbie, I think you are doing it in lieu of Kurt not being.
Okay. So all members actively participate in discussions, and all members have opportunities to voice opinions and positions on agenda topics. We meant that. Members come prepared to engage in discussion by reviewing material provided prior to the meeting. We meant that. Members engage in active listening and avoid interrupting other speakers. Fully meant. Members offer honest opinions and reflect or respect the viewpoints expressed by other members. We fully meant that. The members honor Water Utility Board procedures and policies outlined in the policy book. Yes. Members represent the collective interest of current and future Madison residents. Yes. Members make decisions based on equity principles, considering the decision's impact on all residents. The decision-making process considers who benefits, who is burdened, who does not have a voice at the table. How can policymakers mitigate unintended consequences? I think we fully met that as well.
Okay. Thank you. And thanks, board members, for being here. And so I guess we'll have a motion to adjourn. Do we have that? Uh-huh. And second?
Second.
Okay. And without objection, we are
Are most of the customer service calls, are most of the customer service billing related, or are they mostly bills?